Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. One of the most rewarding parts of being a Game Master is creating your own world. Today, I will give a brief overview of the ancient history of my world and talk about the races available as PCs. So join me on the journey. Together, we can become Game Masters truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener and fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 36 of Game Master's Journey, and welcome to the season 2 finale episode. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. I'm really excited about today's episode. Got a great show for you today. This is another in my series of world building episodes. I know I have a lot of new listeners now who are checking out my Obsidian Monolith campaign and checking out these world building episodes. So I want to just take a second and say welcome aboard to all of my new listeners. Welcome to the Obsidian Monolith, where we cruise through different genres and different systems of role-playing games and just explore them all from the perspective of game masters and improving our craft and getting more enjoyment out of this game, not only for ourselves, but for the players at our tables. I want to apologize if my voice sounds a little scratchy today. I have been doing a lot of podcasting in the past few weeks to get ahead of the game on this show and Star Citizens United so that I can make my 2,000 plus mile move in peace and not have to worry about producing episodes while I'm moving across the country and finding a new place to live and all that fun stuff. So my voice is getting a little tired, sounds a little dry, but I've got some water here and hopefully it won't be too bad. So in previous world building episodes, I talked about some of my big picture ideas for my world, and I gave my thoughts on what I want to do and what I want to accomplish with the gods in my world. I talked about how I want gods not to share portfolios. I want a nice tight pantheon. I don't want more gods than I need, and how I want my world to actually be polytheistic and pantheistic, where people don't approach things with this monotheistic idea of I can only worship one god, which is not really doesn't make a lot of sense, but yet that's what we see so often in D&D. I'm really not sure why. Well, I have my theories, but anyway, I'm trying to get away from that. I'm trying to present something that is at the same time very familiar and recognizable as a D&D fantasy world, but is also different and unique in some ways. And one of the ways that I'm going to try to do that is how I handle my religions and my gods and my mystery cults. So today I wanted to talk a little bit about what I'm thinking as far as PC races. But before I get into that, I want to set a little perspective. So as I said, I want this to be a fairly standard fantasy world in a lot of ways, but I am trying to do some unique things with it. And I've even been throwing around ideas of doing something really unique with the world itself as far as how the world works. Doing something like making it a ring world, like in Larry Niven's books, or something like that. You know, we have Glorantha, where the world is a flat cube. We've got Game of Thrones, where the world has this weird, huge elliptical orbit that leads to varying seasons and things like that. Or even doing something just really out there. Another idea I had was having a supercontinent like Pangaea or the various supercontinents that we've had here on Earth in the past. I haven't decided. None of these ideas really grab me as like, this is definitely what I want to do with my world. And they're all kind of cliche these days. You know, supercontinents are super cliche. Even things like ring worlds and Dyson spheres and things like that, I think are getting a bit cliche in this day and age. And just the whole idea of doing some weird astronomical thing with your world seems kind of cliche. So I don't know. I've had some other ideas for like science fiction stories, like having a world that orbits a blue giant star, or having a world that is more towards the center of the galaxy. So the night sky would look very different and would actually be fairly brightly lit just because of the huge number of stars and nebulas and stuff in the night sky. So I don't know. Still kind of throwing things like that up in the air, but I haven't found one idea that just really grabs me and says, yeah, this is what I want to do with this world. So I haven't gone into the history of the world a lot, but I did want to kind of have a little bit of an idea of how things have transpired. And really, I keep saying history, but what I think mean is prehistory, at least from a human perspective. What was going on in the world before humans came on the stage? And one thing I keep tossing around is doing something with evolution. You know, one idea I had was that the humans on my world actually evolved there from, you know, other forms of life, just like life in humans evolved here in the real world. And then saying that the other races, like the dwarves and the elves and stuff like that, came from other worlds or other planes. Or I even kicked around the idea of doing away with the standard elves and dwarves as other races and having various humanoid races like what we had in the past here on Earth, where we had Homo sapiens and Neanderthals existing simultaneously. And if you go way back before modern humans, I think there was a point where there were, I think, something like 7 different humanoid species on Earth at the same time. So that would be kind of interesting, because obviously, you know, our Tolkien-esque fantasy worlds, or any fantasy world that I've really been familiar with, just ignores evolution and just looks at it from this kind of storybook, mythological, you know, kind of hokey point of view of, oh, these things were created by God and stuff. And I thought it might be fun to actually make it a little bit more realistic and pull evolution into it. But I'm probably not going to do that, just because I want it to be a fantasy world. I don't want it to be a science fiction world disguised as a fantasy world or a science fantasy world or anything like that. So I'm kind of thinking that I'm just going to have, you know, all the races created by gods and stuff. And just like we have, you know, gods and dragons and unicorns and all these make-believe things in these fantasy worlds, we also are just going to ignore evolution, I think. But if you have any cool ideas of how I could actually use evolution in a fantasy world and have it make sense with the different races like halflings and all that stuff, let me know. GameMastersJourney@gmail.com. I'd love to hear people's thoughts on that. So basically what I decided to do is take one of the very tropic ideas from fantasy worlds and from D&D. And a lot of this comes from either other D&D worlds or directly from like the monster manual and stuff like that. So I decided, you know, to go with the cliche of having ages. And right now I'm thinking that the current age in my world is going to be the 7th age. Could be the 6th, depending how I decide to do it and how long an age is. But what I'm thinking is the first age, which right now I'm calling the Age of Immortals, is when the gods came to the world. Some people believe that some or all of the gods created the world. Some people believe that the world was already there and the gods came to the world from somewhere else. I haven't myself decided which of these is true. I do know that a lot of my gods came from elsewhere. And I am thinking that, well, one idea I had was actually having the Age of Immortals be the second age and having the first age be the Age of Primordials. Either doing something like Titans from Greek mythology that were here before the gods, or doing something like the Elder Gods from like the Cthulhu mythos or something like that, and having those entities were here before the gods. I'm not sure about that. I think if I did something like that, I would do the Cthulhu thing, because I think that would be fun. But I think even if I do that, people are going to call the first age the Age of Immortals, because that would have been like, nobody would know about that. Right? Because that was before the gods. Obviously, all this is before there were any mortal people on the world. So there's no way people could know that there were these elder beings here before the gods. So I don't know. I'm still debating with myself whether I want some of the gods that were there first to have actually created the world. I kind of like the idea that the world was there already and already had life on it and had animals and stuff like that. And the gods came from elsewhere and kind of found this virgin world and started to play with it. But I'm not 100% sure. So the first age was the Age of Immortals. And the second age then was the Age of Dragons. And again, none of this is at all original. This is pretty standard D&D stuff. But, you know, again, I don't want to reinvent the wheel here. And I want it to be easy to take things from the Monster Manual, for instance, and put it in my world and not have to change everything because my world is so bizarre, you know. And, you know, the Monster Manual assumes things like an Age of Dragons and Age of Giants and stuff like that. So I'm using that stuff. I think it's kind of cool. So second age was the Age of Dragons. And during this time, dragons ruled the world. One of the ideas I'm kicking around is that the first two gods on the world were dragon deities and were probably Bahamut and Tiamat. And again, I'm not thinking that they created this world, although they could have, but that they just came here and then, of course, they brought dragons with them, or maybe they created dragons here, either or. Some believe dragons were created by the gods. Some believe dragons came to this world from elsewhere. And something that I want to do with my world is I want to take a page from the old White Wolf games from World of Darkness, especially like Vampire the Masquerade, where one thing I really liked about those games, especially Vampire, was that even reading the books, there were very few absolutes given, you know, instead of like, this is, you know, the way things were, the books were more like, this is what people believe. And it was up to the storyteller to decide whether that was true or not. So I'm trying to do that with my world where I have in my mind what really happened, but the way I'm presenting it is, well, this is what people think. And I try to come up with at least two different things that people think about whatever, so that it won't be clear to the players what the truth is, because that's one of the things they can do when they're playing in my world is investigate these things and see if they can figure out what really happened. So instead of presenting this as an encyclopedic, you know, this is the way things are, it's more like, well, this is what people think, but it may not be true. Then my third age was the Age of Giants, and during this time, the giants ruled the world. So if you read about giants in the Monster Manual, and they have some great information about giants, I really love the flavor and history that they give monsters in this edition. It talks about how, you know, long ago, giants had kingdoms, and they were the ruling race of the world. So I'm running with that. I really like that. I think giants are a lot of fun. And the giants and dragons warred with one another. The dragons went into decline after a great war between the metallic and chromatic dragons, during which many dragons were killed. And also, you know, the giants warred with the dragons too. Those dragons that survived carved out territories well isolated from one another and went into hibernation. The giants rose to power in this time, creating great kingdoms. Many people believe the giants were created by the gods, but no one really knows. And again, I'm trying to avoid having ridiculous amounts of gods and having all these stupid pantheons. So I'm trying to avoid having to say, oh, well, there's gods of the giants. So what I'm thinking at this point is there might be one god of the giants, or they might worship one of the other gods. I haven't decided. But yeah, I'm not really going to go there. The fourth age then was the Age of the Elves. For some reason, the great giant kingdoms declined. After a long period where there were no great civilizations to speak of, the elves came on the scene. And it's widely considered truth that the elves came to this world from elsewhere. And of course, no one knows what the elves believe, because one thing that I'm doing with my world is this is all from a human perspective, and I am assuming that at least in the beginning, in the first campaign, that the PCs are all or mostly going to be human, and the non-human races are kind of a mystery because they keep to themselves to a large degree. And again, as I discussed in the previous world building episode, you know, the elves were brought here by their deities. And as each race comes on the scene, you know, those deities kind of fill in holes in the pantheon. So the elven deities come in, and at this point, there's maybe two dragon deities and maybe a giant deity, and that's it. So there's a lot of room for more deities for the fourth age when the elves come. So there's a lot of elven deities in my world. Then the fifth age is the age of dwarves. And long ago, dwarves came to the world. It's said they were brought here from elsewhere by Moradin and the rest of the dwarven gods. For a time, the dwarven and elven gods warred. Eventually, the two races divided the world. The elves took the forests and plains, and the dwarves took the mountains, hills, and underground places. The elves and dwarves shared the world for many millennia. And again, you know, none of this is carved in stone. Another idea I'm kicking around is that the dwarves did not come here from another world. Maybe their gods did, but they created dwarves here. Because I like the idea of the dwarves having a real strong tie to this world that the elves and some of the other races don't. And again, we have this war happening between the dwarven and elven deities because the dwarven pantheon came and put dwarves on the world, but the elven deities were already here and established. So some of these dwarven deities that came were trying to claim portfolios that were already claimed by elven deities. And so there was conflict because, again, I'm not going to have deities in my world that are sharing portfolios because it doesn't make any sense to me. And so then the sixth age is the age of humans, and the elves and dwarves disagree on when exactly humans came on the scene. It's believed they existed for a long time in remote places in the world before either of the older races became aware of them. It's a mystery where the humans came from. The humans believe they were created by their gods, however the elves and dwarves speculate. There is no great war among the gods like there was when the dwarves came on the scene, or if there was, no one knows of it or remembers it. So this is another mystery I'm setting up in my world, kind of reflecting my own indecision about whether to say that the humans were just created by their gods, or whether they evolved here and then they created their gods, or some humans ascended to be gods. So since I haven't made up my mind on that myself, it's kind of a mystery. And even when I do make up my mind, it will still be a mystery. But there are definitely less human gods than there are elven or dwarven gods. Because again, you know, there are fewer gaps in that portfolios, if I could talk. And then the seventh age, the current age, is the age of monsters. In the past few centuries, a multitude of humanoid monsters have arrived upon the world. Orcs, goblinoids, kobolds, and others. No one knows where they've come from, but the older races blame the humans, claiming these new monstrous races are the work of human magic, whether intentional or accidental. So I really think this is going to be fun, having all the monstrous races be relatively new to the world, to where they're kind of a mystery and the other races don't know what to make of them. And I'm also kind of borrowing an idea here from The Wheel of Time that I really liked, where pretty much most, if not all, the quote-unquote monsters in that world were actually created by humans with magic, and they were either animals that were twisted with magic, or humans that were twisted with magic, or animals and humans that were combined with magic. And I really like that idea. And again, it's another way to avoid having a goblin pantheon and an orc pantheon and all this crap. If, you know, these races weren't created by gods, but rather they were created by maybe the humans, you know, messing with magic and experimenting with things and stuff like that. So I think that's enough to kind of set the stage so I can start thinking about what I want to do with PC races. So let me take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, and I'll be right back to talk about PC races.
We all have busy lives, and the hustle and bustle of modern day living can often leave us feeling anxious and stressed. Do you find yourself longing for your free time, yet when it arrives, you can't unwind? Do you feel restless and on edge? Are you having trouble sleeping at night? Are you not finding satisfaction in your romantic relationships? If you are suffering from any of these symptoms, Audible Books is a new therapy that can help you escape from the grind of your routine. You can sit back, close your eyes, and enjoy a beautiful fantasy world, or explore the stars, all without leaving your most comfortable chair. Ask your doctor if Audible is right for you, and take the first step to a richer life today. You can try Audible for 30 days for free, courtesy of Starwalker Studios. Just visit the website for your favorite podcast at starwalkerstudios.com and go to the bottom of the latest episode show notes for details. Audible Books. Enjoy a good book today.
All right, so I have the stage set pretty well now, and you might be thinking, well, Lex, that's, you know, that's a pretty broad prehistory and history of your world. And yes, and that's intentional. I don't want to get too carried away at this point with developing a timeline. What I have right here is more than enough for my purposes to set the stage and give me some context so I can make the decisions I need to make. There are a lot of traps that you can fall into with world building, whether you're world building as a novelist or you're world building as a game master. And world building itself can be a trap where you just world build and world build and world build forever and ever and ever, and it's never ending, and you're never getting to run the game. Or, you know, I had a long discussion with Will Johnson not too long ago, and I'm using parts of that for various episodes because we talked about a lot of different topics. But one of the things, you know, that he mentioned that's happened with him in the past is he spends so much time building and developing a world that by the time he's ready to start playing the game, he's already burned out from all the world building. So that's not, you know, something we want to happen. So one of these traps of world building, I think, is getting too carried away with your history and your timelines. Most of it doesn't matter, and most of it is a waste of your time. The way to think about it, when you start thinking, oh, I need to develop a 10,000 year timeline, or oh, I need to know what happened at this time period or something like that, is ask yourself, is this going to matter to my players? Is this at all relevant specifically or directly to something that they're doing right now? Is this going to inform something that's going on right now? And if it's not going to matter to your players, and if you don't need it for context to make a decision that you need to make, you don't need it. And it's at least at this point, it's a waste of your time to do it. I don't need 10,000 years of developed history to start running games in my world. It's a wasted effort. Now, once I have campaigns up and running and things are fleshed out to where they need to be in the present, then sure, I can go add more history if I want. But even then, I should focus on history that is somehow relevant to the story I'm telling. So if it's not relevant, then who cares? My players aren't going to care. And the last thing I want to do is info dump on my players all this crap that they don't care about just because I spent hours and hours coming up with it and I think it's awesome. They don't care. If it's not relevant, I don't need it. I don't want it. Especially not right now. Right now, my goal is to get this world up and running as soon as possible. I don't want to be burnt out with it before I even run any games in it. And I want to be able to run games in it soon, sooner rather than later, right? So all of this is kind of setting up to think about what races am I going to allow my PCs to play? And I think I mentioned in one of the previous episodes how I really don't want to limit PC options when it comes to classes. Now, there might be one or two classes that I decide I'm not going to allow because they just don't fit the flavor of my world. But as much as I can, I want to allow all the different classes. I want to allow all the different archetypes and things like that. I don't want to say, oh, there's no clerics in my world or something like that. But I do think that PC races is somewhere where I can make some changes and really give my world a different flavor. And I don't mind doing this because I remember when I first started playing D&D in the first edition and second edition days, you know, some of the races we have now that are in the core player's handbook either didn't exist or weren't common playable races back then, like the Dragonborn. You know, even in second edition, like half-orcs weren't super common unless you had a certain supplement or something. I think they were more common in first edition. So I'm not afraid to say these races aren't allowed. And at the same time, I'm not afraid to maybe add some different races that aren't in the player's handbook that are more common in my world. One thing that I really like about how they handled races in this edition, and this is how I want to approach it, is the idea of rarity. Just like with magic items, you have different rarities. With races, you have different rarities. So I love that idea and I'm totally running with it. So I basically have in my world, I have common races uncommon races, and then rare races. And then, of course, races that just don't exist. So here are my thoughts. This is all work in progress. So common races are common, you know, and for the most part, those races are available to play. Unless, like I said, the first campaign, I may be like, I only want human PCs because we're going to start in this small human village. And I want you in character, in world, to learn about the different races in my world and how they work in my world, because they're not going to necessarily be the same as what you're used to before I want you playing those races, right? And I like the idea, and I used to do this in my version of Forgotten Realms that I ran back in high school. I like the idea of players unlocking races, just kind of like a video game kind of thing. Like you start out and you play humans, right? But as your player character encounters races, then you unlock those for play in the future. Because again, you know, I don't want you playing an elf in my world until you understand the elves in my world, especially in the very beginning, because if I have you playing a dwarf in my world and you have no idea that dwarves are very different in my world than they are in like Forgotten Realms, and you're playing your dwarf like you would play a dwarf in Forgotten Realms, and now the dwarves in my world are the same as dwarves in Forgotten Realms, which was not what I wanted. So instead, I like this idea of unlocking races where you start out, you're playing a human because we all know what humans are. And maybe in the humans, I have different cultures, right? So maybe start out, we play a culture that is more familiar if I have some more kind of out there cultures. And then during play, let's say you're a human character, you go and you meet some dwarves and you stay in their city and you really learn about the dwarves and you interact with dwarven NPCs. And then after a certain amount of that, where I feel like, okay, I've kind of shown you how the dwarves work. Well, now in the future, when you make a character, you can make a dwarf now, because now I know that you know what they're about and you have what you need to be able to at least have a chance of role-playing one properly and not just having them be a short human with a big beard, right? So I really like that idea. So, you know, that's kind of on top of the common uncommon thing, because, you know, any of these non-human races may need to be unlocked before you can play them. And again, that is going to depend on how much I change them. You know, if my hill dwarf is exactly like a hill dwarf in regular D&D, well, then you won't have to unlock that because I assume that you know what a hill dwarf is. All right. So common races are, other than that caveat that I just gave you, are available to play. Uncommon races are also available to play. However, I would want a little bit more from a player as far as a character concept and backstory if they want to play one of those races. So, for instance, an uncommon race in my world are the wood elves, okay? So the wood elves are not as common in my world as the more common races. And so if you're like, I want to play a wood elf, assuming that that's even an option because it's been unlocked, then I want a really good concept for your character and I want a really good backstory. And that's not to say that you have to give that to me whole cloth. You know, I can help you create that. But I really want you to have a really solid idea of who this character is if you're going to play a more uncommon race. And then the rare races can only be played with DM approval and, of course, must be unlocked first to be able to play them and will depend on the campaign. So some rare races or even some uncommon races may just not be appropriate for certain campaigns, depending on the story I want to tell. So common races we have, and these, a lot of these I'm going with the Forgotten Realms terms and I may change them. You know, this is very beginning part of the process. So, you know, one way to save yourself a lot of work world building is steal as many ideas as you can from other places and then take that and make the changes you need to make to realize your vision. So I'm going to have gold dwarves or something like them, which are the hill dwarves in the player's handbook. Shield dwarves, which are mountain dwarves in the player's handbook, are another common race. Moon elves, which are high elves in the player's handbook, are the most common adventure elves, very much like moon elves in Forgotten Realms. They enjoy the company of other races more than other elves and have a wanderlust most elves find alien. Humans are the most common race in the current age. Humans are everywhere, and there are numerous ethnicities, which of course I will have to come up with. Although, you know, again, I get these big picture things and then I'm going to start microcosm and work out. So for the first campaign, probably all the characters will be human and probably they will all be the same ethnicity because they're all going to start in the same place. So I don't have to create 20 ethnicities to start out with. So uncommon races, we have the Sun Elves, which again are High Elves in the Player's Handbook. They're almost as numerous as Moon Elves, but they don't often adventure. They don't really enjoy non-elven company as much as the Moon Elves do, and they don't particularly enjoy traveling in foreign lands. Also, the Wood Elves are an uncommon race. They are fairly common in the world, but they rarely adventure, so that's why they're uncommon, even though there's lots of them. Lightfoot Halflings, and right here I'm going to say that this is an opportunity for me to really play up races that I really like. I really like elves and dwarves, and so I'm really going to do a lot with them culturally and mechanically, and downplay or downright get rid of races I don't like. And honestly, I don't like halflings and gnomes. I never have, and I'm really tempted just not to have them in my world at all. But again, I'm kind of reluctant to limit player choices too much. So right now I have them in here and I'm just making them more rare. But I am seriously considering not having gnomes or halflings in my world at all. And part of that decision is going to be that I do want to come up with some races that aren't standard. And if I come up with enough of those, then I can get rid of gnomes and halflings and you still have the same number of choices or maybe even more. Because I just don't like them. I think they're kind of lame. Stout halflings are also uncommon. Rock gnomes, as far as gnomes, are uncommon. Half elves are uncommon. I like having the whole thing of half elves don't happen very often because humans and elves just are so disparate culturally and biologically that it's very rare for half elves to happen. And then, you know, there are different types of half elves, right? For instance, a half drow elf are pretty much unheard of and probably don't even exist. Half moon elves would be the most common. Half sun elves and half wild elves would be rare. Half orcs are also uncommon, although they do more commonly happen than half elves because orcs are not above raping humans, and that's how some half orcs happen. And then my rare races, I have the dark elves. I'm going to have Varial, although that might be a race that just never gets unlocked because I find PCs being able to fly at first level could be really annoying. Dragonborn, again, are in the rare, but again, only because I want to have choices for people. I actually hate the Dragonborn as a race and will probably not have them in my world. But again, I want to come up with my own alternatives before I start taking too many races away. But right now they're in rare, so they have to be unlocked and allowed, which they won't be because I don't like them. Forest gnomes are rare. Tieflings are rare. And Azamar are rare, although I will have tieflings and Azamar in my world. I think they're really cool if they're rare. You know, if maybe once in a blue moon you have a PC that's a tiefling or an Azamar, that's cool. If they're all over the place, they're not cool. And then another race I'm thinking about adding as a rare race is the Kryn version of the Minotaur. And we just recently had a write-up of that for 5e on the Wizards site. So hopefully they'll do some playtesting of that and come out with a more finalized form of that. Or I could do my own. But I always liked the Kryn Minotaurs, and I think that they would fit well in my world. And then one last thing I want to talk about when it comes to races is I just mentioned a minute ago that I want to do more with the elves and the dwarves, and especially the way kind of my mythology works in my world. You know, it makes sense to do more with them, right? And so one way that I'm thinking about doing that is I'm thinking about expanding on the sub-races that are available for elves and dwarves. And my thought is, for instance, for the elves, I want to have a sub-race that is associated with each of the elven deities in my world. So basically, each deity has their own flavor of elf. And I want to do the same thing with the dwarven deities. So kind of what I'm thinking now is I have the Sun Elves, which are the children of Corallon, and their stats are as the High Elf in the Player's Handbook. Dark Elves are the children of Loth. Wood Elves are the children of Nylea, who is my nature goddess, and I stole her from Magic the Gathering because I liked her a lot better than the Forgotten Realms elven nature deity. Moon Elves are the children of Sehanine, and I'm thinking about actually giving them the Eladrin stats from the DMG. The Winged Elves of Ariel are the children of Erdry, and I've been working on their stats. I'm getting pretty close to something I'm happy with for those. And the Gold Elves, which notice are different than the Sun Elves, are the children of Hanalei, and I'm still working on stats for those. And then the same thing with the dwarves. Once I have my dwarven pantheon nailed down, I want to come up with a subrace for each of the dwarven gods. Now, these may not all be different mechanically. Like my different elves, I may have two different subraces that have the same stats. Just like in Forgotten Realms, the Moon Elves and the Sun Elves are both high elves from the player's handbook. There's nothing different mechanically. They just look different and they're culturally different. So I may do that, but I think it would be kind of fun to have more subrace choices for people, especially if I'm going to get rid of gnomes and halflings and dragonborn, then that's a way to kind of compensate for that, for having more subraces for the elves and the dwarves. And, I don't know. I go back and forth with the dragonborn because I do have dragons in my world, but I just don't think the dragonborn are a really great way to bring in drag. I think they're kind of dumb, honestly. If I wanted to do something with dragons, I'd rather just have a campaign where the players play dragons and have the stipulation that they have to play a dragon that can polymorph into human form so that we can have, you know, scenes and adventures where they're interacting with humans in the humanoid form. I think I'd rather do that than deal with dragonborn. I just think they're kind of dumb. I'm just not a fan. All right, so there are my thoughts on the races of my world. And again, this is very preliminary. I still need to come up with some ideas for some unique player character races. And, you know, I may go and look at other settings and other D&D stuff and get some ideas that way. Like maybe I'll have Thrycreen in my world. Who knows? I may go to the monster manual and find something that I think would be a cool PC race in there. I may take something from a movie or a book that I like that doesn't exist in 5th edition right now and make that into a PC race, or I may come up with something completely all my own creation. I'm not sure. One idea I've been kicking around is I really like plants, like intelligent plants, and I think like an intelligent plant race that's humanoid would be kind of cool. That'd be a cool thing to do. But the nice thing is that 5th edition is really easy to mod and come up with stuff for. I'm sure I could have come up with my own race for Pathfinder 3.5, but it would have just been a pain in the ass and I wouldn't have wanted to. But with 5th edition, I'm not worried about it at all. I already have come up with some of my own backgrounds. I'm going to be running a Dark Elf campaign for some of my players, and I also totally redid the Dark Elves. I made them more like 2nd edition Dark Elves. For instance, they have a intelligence bonus instead of a charisma bonus. How did Dark Elves go from having a charisma penalty to having a charisma bonus? That doesn't make much sense. But anyway, and I gave them a lot of the 2nd edition abilities, like they have the dwarven resistance to poison and stuff like that. Interestingly, the one thing I did not give them was magic resistance. Would have been easy to do. They get advantage on saves versus spells and could even go so far as to say that they have actual resistance to damage from spells, which would mean they take half damage. Easy to do mechanically to reflect the magic resistance from 2nd edition, but the reason I decided not to do it is it really nerfs any kind of spellcaster character. Now, a cleric, you can get around it because you could say, oh, well, you know, Loth blesses her clerics because she's much more involved than a lot of the other deities are, and they're able to overcome magic resistance and maybe just give clerics of Loth like a free feat that lets them overcome magic resistance, kind of like spell penetration from 3rd edition. But as far as like a wizard, it's like, you know, that poor player of a wizard would be really nerfed, you know, because a lot of his, he'd have to focus on more like summoning and stuff like that because he wouldn't be able to do like evocation because it would not work very well. So I decided to do away with magic resistance just for that reason. But yeah. So anyway, I'm just saying it's really easy to come up with stuff. And for that campaign, I came up with two backgrounds just for the Dark Elf campaign. I came up with a masseuse background because if you remember from the 2nd edition days, you know, it talked about how the drow were really into getting massages because they were so tense all the time. And so I came up with a background for that. It's really cool. And I came up with a torturer background. And they're very drow focused. I mean, you could take those backgrounds and use them with another character with a little tweaking, but I really rooted them in the drow culture, specifically Forgotten Realms drow culture, specifically Menzo Branzan Forgotten Realms drow culture. And that's just something amazing you can do with backgrounds, how you can just really tailor them to very specific things that you want to do in your campaign. And I love how easy it is to do that stuff in 5th edition. All right, well, that is going to wrap up episode 36 of Game Master's Journey. If you'd like to reach me, please email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can follow me on Google Plus, just search for Lex Starwalker, and follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit our website, starwalkerstudios.com. There you can find the show notes for this and all the episodes of Game Master's Journey. You can find lots of helpful links in those show notes, including a link to our Google Plus community. You can also, at the bottom of the show notes, find a link to the free trial from Audible that you can get courtesy of Game Master's Journey. And you can find the details to that there as well. At the top of the show notes, you can find a link to our Patreon page if you'd like to become a patron of the show. Greatly appreciate it. You can also find our donate button at the top of the show notes. And at the bottom of the show notes, you can find our Amazon referral link for when you shop on Amazon, and you can really help us out by using those. And finally, at the top of the show notes, you can find buttons that will take you directly to our show on iTunes and Stitcher if you'd like to leave a review. And I really appreciate it when people leave reviews. That helps people find the show. And if you leave a 5-star review of the show, I will give you a big thank you and a shout out in a future episode of Game Master's Journey. So once again, I want to thank you for downloading and listening to the show. I want to thank you so much for your support. Thank you to the patrons. Thank you to people who leave reviews. Thank you to people who give donations. I really appreciate it. I hope in the coming week you can find some time to play your RPG of choice. Until next week, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.